common at dad's point of view. That's right, B. Sal, he knows what's cool. He's
not. Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show at Dad's Point of View. You can email me at bruce@bruceallen.com, and you can tweet me at Bruce Allen, and you can like the Dad's Point of View Facebook page, and you can be part of the Dad Chat community on Google Plus. You can do all of that, and I hope you'll join us at Dad Chat tonight. I have a special guest in substitute for Dr. Weberman, who I'm happy to say is a real mom. This Monday, she gave birth to Serena Sky Weberman. And both mom and daughter are doing well and coming home from the hospital tomorrow. Can't wait to see more pictures. I got one of the baby, and she looked gorgeous. And she has recommended that we have a friend of hers, Dr. Liz Mathias, as her replacement guest. And we talked today on the phone, Dr. Liz, and I decided let's go for it. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and certified school psychologist who specializes in assisting children and their families with autism, ADHD, anxiety, and learning behavior disorders. She has all kinds of other credentials. I don't want to waste too much time telling you, but you can find her at psychconsult.weebly.com. I'll ask her again for that, but that's psychconsult.weebly.com. Dr. Liz, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much for having me. What an honor.
Well, it's a pleasure. And we were talking on the drive up here about how I call it the diagnosis du jour, that our kids seem to be diagnosed with all these things left, right, and sideways. Now, my wife is convinced I still have ADHD, and I sometimes wonder what I might have been diagnosed with given my hyperactivity as a young kid. And it just seems there's a whole lot of diagnosing going on, and I'm not sure that sometimes it's just not the individuality of a particular kid, boy or girl. And by the way, this may shock you, boys and girls are different.
Yes, they are.
So your thoughts. Your thoughts.
So, the overdiagnosing. I think what happens a lot of time, especially in the public school, is you might have a boy or a girl who has a lot of energy, is easily distracted, energetic, fidgety, restless, all that stuff.
You're describing me, by the way.
You're describing a lot of people with and without ADHD, and I think teachers don't know what to do with it. And because the class sizes have become bigger right now and the responsibilities on the teachers to do all of these assessments throughout the school year, there's a lot more accountability on the teacher. There's almost less time to differentiate instruction. So teachers get overwhelmed and they automatically want to refer to guidance, to the guidance department or to the child study team saying there's something wrong. And sometimes there's overlap. Sometimes you have a central auditory processing disorder, which looks like ADHD, but it's not. It has to do with the auditory system, not with actual hearing itself, but the way the brain processes sound. For some kids, they process all sounds at once, and they can't filter sound.
So is that like, is that like mental dyslexia in a weird way?
It has to do more with the auditory system. It has to do with the way your ears and the way your brain processes sound. So where some people are able to take sound like the humming of a computer or a light bulb or the lawnmower outside, and they can turn that into background noise, a lot of children with central auditory processing disorder can't. So I had a young man.
That's interesting. Wait, hold on a second. I think that explains something in my life.
Tell me, what does it explain?
Yes. I am unable to hear my wife when she asks me to do a chore. So it must be that auditory wavelength.
I think that's called selective hearing. You just can't hear her voice, right?
I've gotten really good at that, actually. She thinks I'm hard of hearing. I can hear a pin drop, but the moment she wants me to do something, what was that? Sorry.
Oh, I think it has to do more of the fact when you have a lot of the sounds in the environment, you'll have, it's just hard to filter out and then pay attention to the primary source. So I'll say to parents or to young adolescents who are in my office that if you're hearing everything in the environment at the same equal volume as my voice, then you know that you're not filtering. And so what does that translate to in the classroom? It translates to a child who is hearing the squeaky sneakers in the hall and someone opening their locker or the flipping of papers. I had one young man that I worked with, and he said to me, it drives me crazy during a test. I can hear all the papers flipping.
So what do you do about that? I find that fascinating, and I believe that's genuine. So what do you do when someone has that auditory thing?
First of all, I like to build awareness with the kids. I like them to know that this is what's going on. So when you are having a hard time focusing, it's not because you're bad. It's not because of anything you're doing wrong. It's just the way your brain processes information. So you need to ask to, and this one boy, I encouraged him. I said, if the flipping of the papers and you can hear the pencil writing on paper, then you need to ask your teacher to go to another room or to go to another place where it's quiet because you're distracted.
And you know what's interesting about that? You're teaching them how to solve a problem, too.
Exactly. It's building self-awareness and advocating for him or herself.
Which is a great thing.
Which is fantastic. I really like for kids to advocate for themselves because it doesn't create that sense of hopelessness and helplessness and not being empowered. I like to empower the kids I work with. I want them to go up to a teacher and say, sitting here by this window is really distracting for me. And so, you know, coming back to the point of sometimes it's not ADHD, sometimes it's a central auditory processing disorder, but it looks like ADHD. And sometimes anxiety looks like ADHD, but it's not. It's anxiety. And I've had several parents come to me and say, I think my child has ADHD. Will you test him or her? And I say, of course. And I go through all the testing, and then I look, and I'm like, this is anxiety, but it looks like ADHD because if a child is preoccupied with their thoughts because they're worrying or obsessing about something and they miss moments of instruction, they then don't know how to do the work. So you're like, oh, that child is ADHD. They're inattentive, but they're not.
And then, it builds on itself. They miss a couple. They don't know how to speak up, and then they get further behind, and it looks more and more like it's ADHD rather than the anxiety that caused the glitch in the first place.
Exactly. And I think also what happens in schools with teachers, I don't think they mean to do this, but I just see this with my own son, with kids that I've worked with, is now it's behavioral. Now it's behavioral. And now we need to nip this in the bud. We need to give them consequences. And I'm like, really? Behavioral, when someone is behaving in some way, it's because they're trying to communicate a need. Because sometimes kids can't verbalize what they need. So if that's the case, then let's help them figure out what it is before we go to the punitive route. I'm not a big fan of punishing. I like to understand the roots of behavior first before we go on.
I really respect your wisdom. I wish we had more of that at the schools. It's interesting. I have my own experience with being misdiagnosed. I fought depression my entire life, or so I thought. And all the different therapists went to and psychiatrists all, you know, gave me either verbal counseling or in some cases meds to fight depression. Mm-hmm. And about 7 years ago, I realized, based on a really very concrete thing that happened, that maybe I wasn't depressed. Maybe I was anxious. And I went to the shrink I was seeing at the time, and I described what happened. And he said, you know, you're probably right. And he switched the meds that he had been giving me to ones that had to do with anxiety. Completely, thoroughly turned around my life.
Wow.
And to this shrink's credit, he was willing to be wrong, because he had misdiagnosed me too. And all these years, I had been misdiagnosed. And I'm going through the same thing with my older son now, who's got some issues that are, you know, not insoluble, but we're not clear on what they are. And it's hard, and especially in the school environment, going back to the original topic, they see so many kids. The rush to quickly put a label on is the rush to solve a problem. And that is the problem that you're describing, is these teachers, in many cases, are legitimately overwhelmed. Then they got Common Core and all these, you know, aptitude tests that they have to do. Not to mention class management is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So, boy, this is a real problem. I'm not even sure what the answer is, other than like you said, awareness.
Building awareness. I think helping parents to understand what it is. Once they have a label for it, then they can seek information. And half of the battle is just finding out what it is a lot of the time. What is this? Once you have a label for it, okay, I can look it up, I can understand it, and now I can cope, and I can figure out what the treatment is. And so you see a decrease in anxiety right there. when the parent is not as stressed, then the child naturally will respond.
Oh, my God. Is it a vicious circle or is it?
Oh, I'm working with a couple of parents. I do a lot of parent coaching. And so I'll say to them, you know, before we even get to your child, we need to work on you. And they're not coming to me for them. They're coming for their children. And I'll say, but in an effort to help your child, we need to help you manage your emotional level. Because, of course, you're having an emotional reaction. This is your baby. I get it. When you are dealing with your child, all sense of logic goes out the window. And I say that from personal experience.
As a mom of three. You are a mom of three.
I am a mom of three, an almost 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 17-month-old. And I don't see things clearly when it's my babies. Mm-hmm. All I know is I want to protect them. I want them to be well. I want them to be challenged. I want them to be well adjusted. But we all come into this world with temperament and genetics, and it's going to manifest itself very differently. I have three children that are very different people, but they all came from the same genetic code.
Well, I'm convinced one of my kids comes from the pool man. there's no way. My wife says, I mean, he was sort of cute. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. Listen, we're nearly out of time. Dr. Liz, please tell our listeners where they can find you.
I am at www.psychconsult, so psychconsult.weebly.com. That's my website. There's a lot of information there. There's resources, a lot of my blogs, radio segments. There's a lot of information, plus an email address. So I really welcome listeners to send me emails, ask your questions, share your thoughts and concerns, and I will share it out there with everyone else because I'm sure you're not alone.
I would love you to join Dad Chat tonight if you could. We're talking about our kids' sexuality and how much choice plays or doesn't play in all of our sexuality. And
I'll be there.
Good, good, please. And if you have any questions on how to participate, call me on my drive home.
I will.
Would you be in the next half hour to an hour?
Sounds good. I will.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Liz. I hope we'll have you back. And listeners, stay tuned for my closing remarks after these last messages.
You dig.